Okay, two different Svasamasas today. Okay. One about humility, and one about Jews and non-Jews. Not so much Kabbalah today. Today's a little bit more. We'll move in. Today's a little bit more. Guys, come move in a little bit so we can like come around this table. You can stand or sit if you want. Seats open. Okay, so Bilam initially is seen as very, very cocky. And he enjoys the attention. He enjoys the negotiations. He says, we have to wait and see. And Chazal talk about him being the antithesis of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu had an Ayin Tova. Bilam had an Ayin Ra. Avraham Avinu had Nefesh Shefela. Bilam had a Nefesh Rechava. Nefesh Gevoa. Avraham Avinu had a Ruach Nemucha. So part of Bilam's crime is that he's so haughty and so self-absorbed. And the Gemara says, whoever has these traits, self-absorption, too much self-ambition for your own interests, you're a Talmud of Bilam. Okay, now, it's a poetic way of saying you're following Bilam. You're not a Talmud of Bilam. You don't need to study Bilam. You're similar to Bilam. You don't need to study Bilam. But in Chassidus, especially in the Svasemas, he reads Gemaras like we read Tanakh. When we read the Parsha or Tanakh, what was that word used? What was this word used? When we read Gemara, we're reading the content. But in Chassidus, the Gemaras are darshan like words in Tanakh. So he's a Talmud of Bilam. You're not a Talmud of Bilam. You're a moral degenerate. You're just a cocky person. You have to be a Talmud of Bilam. So the answer he says is as follows. If you look carefully at Bilam, Bilam actually was at some point humble. Bilam says, you know what? I can't say anything. I don't really have any autonomy. Whatever Hashem wants, I'll say. I don't really have. But if you dig deeply into Bilam, you look under the hood, it wasn't real humility. It was humility so that he could accomplish something, so that Hashem would give him the green light, that Hashem would look at him and say, you know what, I'm proud of you, you're a humble person, your rewards, you get to go. It was humility. You don't need to learn cockiness from Bilam. People are cocky, arrogant, haughty naturally, sadly. But the danger is if you learn from Bilam how to be manipulative in your humility, where you'll be humble just so people will think you're a humble person and respect you more. Or you'll be humble in order to acquire something for yourself. True humility is when it's completely self-abnegation. You have no interests. You're mizbata tekadosh baruch hu. You have no personal. You meet very often in life two different people. You meet people who are truly, truly humble. The best way to determine their humility is they don't even know how good they are. Like some people you meet, they're not even aware of it. There's no self-awareness. It's very rare. When you find those people, you should really appreciate them. Most of the time, not most of the time, but very often you're people that are humble and you're trying to get something from it and with it. Still better, as I'll say in a moment, from no humility, from outright self-aggrandizement and naked ambition and naked arrogance. But Bilam is an example of someone who's humble to accomplish something. That's why he says, nofel uglui nayim. I'm willing to be nofel, to take a hit, to be less, so that I'll be able to have more nevuah, so that Hashem will reward you. Nofel uglui nayim. So that's why if you're just haughty, you don't have to be a Talmud of Bilam. But if you're haughty, if you're humble in order to achieve something, then you're really studying Bilam, because that's a little bit more subtle. Now, the interesting part is that Hashem actually rewards Bilam's humility. And says, oh, I see that you're being humble and that you're telling me you realize that you can't control your own speech. As a reward, you get to go with the people of Moab and all those riches. So what you see from here is that humility is not all or nothing. And that even if it is an adulterated form of humility, not the highest and purest form of humility, it still counts. And Hashem still takes it into account. It's still Bilam, and he gets his schar immediately to wipe him off the face of the planet. But humility is not either it's purely, purely authentic, l'shem shemayim, or it doesn't count at all, especially humility, which is so hard to achieve. So when you're trying to build the trait of humility, don't say, oh, I'm not really humble, I'm doing this for some purpose. Even if you start building humility, as Bilam started to build humility, even though in the end it was for self-interest, it's still something which registers. So, for example, the Svasamas talks a little bit about externals. He becomes a little bit of a Musar Sefer now. That if you do externals, I'll just read the last line of this piece to you. He says, V'yesh hachna b'maisa. Gam kein lavo, al yidei zeh lachna amitas, v'gam kein tov. sometimes people want to know, how do you start becoming humble? It's a hard question. How do you become humble? If anyone has an answer to that question, he may not be humble, because if I'm humble, then I don't know. I'm humble. It's called sanctimonious. If I want to say I'm humble, then it'd be sanctimonious. It's self-serving. Only Moshe Rabbeinu could say, because he wasn't self-aware. But what I can tell you is, if you work on behavioral traits that will be humble at the table with your friends, if it's behavioral, then behavioral can sometimes become emotional. So even if you're not humble as a person, if you act in a way that's humble, you defer to people, you let people go before you, you speak in a way, even though it may not yet correspond to an inner humility, when it comes to humility in particular, the chitzonios are mafil the pnimios. The external behavior can really start to trigger. I can't yet explain it to you. I don't understand. I haven't thought about it well enough, but I've seen it in my life that if you act in a humble way, it can percolate into your internal system and make you into a more humble person. So that's the lesson from Bilaam. The lesson from Bilaam is really twofold. Number one, there's humility, which sometimes is calculating and manipulative. And that's, someone like that is a student of Bilaam, because you have to see it in someone to understand it, to dissect it. And that's what Bilaam accomplishes. And that's why he gets rewarded from Hashem, because even though it's a false humility, it's still humility. Okay? Now, the Bilaam's claim, going back, shifting to a different issue. Bilaam and Balak are conspiring. They're afraid of the Jewish people. What's their first line? Hinei kisa es ein haaretz. They're covering the ein haaretz, which is a really, really interesting phrase. You really see anti-Semitism and hatred on display, where you make people into imaginary monsters. Who are the Jewish people? They're people. They're human beings. Who are they for Bilaam and Balak? They're oxes that are licking up all the grass of the field, and there are a swarm, probably a swarm of locusts, of people that are covering the Ein Haaretz. The Ein Haaretz is either the Shemesh or the actual eye. Imagine the eye of the ground. Imagine the earth had an eye. Imagine the earth was personified. Sometimes when you see, you know that in Hebrew, a lot, speaking to Lab B'nei Chutzarts, when you come to this little well of water in the middle of a forest, in the middle of a desert, like a little reservoir of water, it's called an Ein Sukkar, Ein Gamlein, Ein, because it looks like an eye. You're walking in the desert, all of a sudden you see this like a little round bear of Mayim, and it looks like an eye. So it's called Ein Sukkar or Ein Jabla, whatever the phrases are. So they're covering, they're a swarm that's covering. But for the Sfasemis, Bilaam's concern wasn't that they're swallowing the eye, but that they're monopolizing Hashem. Because Bilaam is still dealing with this issue of Jewish selection. And that's, if you look beneath Bilaam's prophecy, it's not just a military struggle, but Bilaam is digging deep into it. What right do the Jewish people have to be selected? Because when they're selected, it's at the cost of other people. And that's why, Hein Am Levadai Dishkom V'Agrem Leis Chashav, they're separate people, they were chosen, Mimana Afar Yaakov. Bilaam isn't just dealing with their weapons. If this was just a military conflict, he'd say they're too strong, they have too many weapons. He's going back to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Miros Tzirim Arenu, Mikvos Ashirenu, Tamos Nashimos Yisharon, Mimana Afar Yaakov. He's struggling with Jewish selection. Say it a little bit differently, Bilaam assumed, the first person in history is to assume that the Jewish selection had expired. That was his gamble. He wouldn't dare oppose them the year after Yitzias Mitzvayim because he saw all the miracles. But now it's the Egel, and now it's the Meraglim, and now the Nate generation has died out. Now Aaron and Miriam are dead, and Moshe's on its way out, so maybe they're no longer selected. Maybe I can rewrite history, backward engineer history. Bilaam's really the first Christian. He's not a Christian theologically. He's the first person to claim we were chosen, but we betrayed Hashem and we forfeited it. That's Bilaam's gambit, because he's a smart person. He's a prophet. Why does he think he can succeed where power didn't succeed? Because it's 40 years later, and the Jews are limping their way through the desert, having sinned twice, and having the entire magic generation died out, and all their leadership deposed or dead. So he's thinking, maybe I can redo this. And part of his claim is it fair, Hashem, to choose one people? Hinei chisas ein haaretz. All that light that's coming to humanity, Am Yisrael is monopolizing. It's not fair. And to understand this, the Sfasemis quotes the famous Medrash, that Hashem gives the Nevi'im a Navi so that they won't have any complaints. So basically Hashem is preempting all the complaints that the nations would have that Bilaam can possibly stoke. It's not fair. They had Nevuah. We never had Nevuah. Why is it fair for us to be punished? Hashem will give you a Navi. So the setting is not just geopolitical and military. The setting is an important question. Is it fair of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Umos Olam for their position to be diminished at the cost of Am Yisrael, or for Am Yisrael to have an enhanced presence? That's an interesting question, and Bilam evidently is asking that question, and the Sfasemes answers that question as follows. Okay, this is his line. Achin bi'emes, adarava, zehatov haganos. I'll just paraphrase without reading the entire section because we're running a little bit late, then I'll read one line. The amount of light, namely Shechina, revelation, understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and everything that derives from that, science, technology, math, advance. The amount of light that Am Yisrael is able to receive from direct revelation and then peripherally pass on to humanity is far superior to whatever humanity would have been capable of achieving on their own. So the Jews are not covering the light, the Jews are creating light. The Jews are creating more, as long as we see it that way. As long as we see ourselves as providing this light. So it's not just that the Jews are monopolizing all the presence of Hashem. The Ein Haaretz, the light of Hashem that gets delivered to the Jewish people, is so massive that when it starts to radiate outwards, it far transcends whatever levels humanity were capable of, because again, human failure, human weakness. So let me read that line. Tas ha'ara, shiyesh l'chol ha'bruim ata, b'emtzas ha'kedusha, shi'adil ha'vnei Yisrael, the little light waves that peripherally bounce off from the Jews to the rest of the nations, he'ola harbe yoser, it far surpasses whatever existed before Am Yisrael was chosen. L'chein heimasher bo b'tayin hashav, this claim that, oh, we have less light, they're not really assessing the situation correctly. They're just angry at Hashem, they're just rebelling, they're looking for a reason to rebel against Hashem. It's not fair, you didn't give us the light. But if they were to assess it accurately, im hayu chafetzim b'emes, if they were to assess it honestly, they would see how fantastic. Now, why I'm quoting this to you is because Chassidus is a very, very, very interesting thought process. It's an 18th century Eastern European process. It doesn't really think that much about Goyim. It's really centered upon the Jews, their relationship with Hashem, Jewish identity based on Kabbalah. Kabbalah is a lot about HaKadosh Baruch Hu choosing the Jewish people and our cosmic role. But on the other hand, it's very universalistic because it talks about the cosmos and about fixing it. And Jews aren't the only people that inherit the cosmos. Human beings aren't the only people that inherit the cosmos. So you have to be very attentive in Chassidus where you're talking, and this really sits at the seam of that question, which is, I think, the question of our generation. In our generation, a lot of people have become very, very nationalistic. Baruch Hashem, we've rebuilt our Bate Medrash, we're rebuilding our land, we're rebuilding our people. We're thinking about Avas Yisrael, what it means to be a Jew. But in some circles, that creates a muted tone of universalism. We don't remember that we're here to teach the world, and God forbid not to view human beings as just sideshows or irrelevant. They're also Hashem's children, Hashem's creation, the Tzelem Elokim, and by building the state of Israel. Right now, it's hard because the world is still broken. And in our efforts to settle the land of Israel, the world doesn't appreciate it, isn't happy that we're in the land. One day it will be true. One day those two trajectories will overlap. And the whole world will be happy that we're living in a luxury and they're settling the land. Because they'll realize the light. And this is a microcosm of where we are right now. Where we're bringing light into your territory, says Am Yisrael to Bolam. And all you can see is that we're bringing darkness. And all you can see is that we're successing our hearts. By settling Eretz Yisrael, we hope to improve humanity. Historically and metaphysically. But right now, the world doesn't see it that way yet, and we have to operate within the world's, you know, law of morality expectations. But we're right in the beginning of Parshas Balak, where we're coming into your neighborhood to improve your neighborhood. And by the way, have you paid attention? We are improving your neighborhood. This is the first time that Israel has water. This is the first time that Israel has resources in 2,000 years. It's leading. It's going to improve you, and it's behind some of the, hopefully, the accords that were signed this winter, that we're looking to improve the neighborhood. But unfortunately, they're not yet able to see it. Okay, so two totally different Sfasemeses. One is about the meat of humility, and one is about Jewish people delivering rather than stealing and monopolizing, but unfortunately it's not seen that way. Okay, have a good day, everyone.